Recording in progress. Hello, Christine. Welcome
Hello,
to the podcast. So nice to have you on. I just need to give everyone a bit of context. So Christine and I showed in the same showroom this past September, and we just hit it off, you know. It was just so nice to like connect, and I ended up buying one of Christine's really beautiful, stunning silk dresses. And you were actually telling me a lot about your kind of family history and your kind of pathway to, you know, from your family moving from Vietnam to America. And it just really sunk quite deep, and I really wanted to share that again with podcast listeners, if you wouldn't mind. Yeah.
Thanks so much for having me, Lauren. I'm very grateful to be here and also to be talking to you about this.
Let's just give everyone an introduction about, just tell us about yourself, what you do, and let's start from there.
Today is a really big day. It's Kiwi, which is my woman's boutique. It's 20 years old today. And I think my professional, in terms of like fashion, came from Kiwi. I am a boutique owner. I own Kiwi, a woman's clothing store, and also Fig, which is a men's clothing store. And aside from that, I'm also a designer of my namesake, Christine Alpoulay. It's a collection of women's clothing that is very feminine and powerful. So I'm a trifecta of businesses. So professionally, that's who I am.
Happy birthday, Kiwi!
Yay! So big!
That's so massive, 20 years. Like, honestly, that's a huge milestone. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you so much.
And, like, being in New York, like, it's such a cutthroat, tough place to really establish yourself in. You know, that to me is like massive. Being in Brooklyn for 20 years, like, that's no joke. So that came first, and no, then the brand. So what made you want to start the brand?
I am a daughter of a garment worker, garment factory worker. My mom has, ever since we came from Vietnam, she taught herself how to sew and started working in factories. And I was always right beside her. So clothing, fashion, construction, pattern making, all of those things came very naturally to me, in a very technical and also very much like a language that I was learning. So I never really decided to become a designer. It was just something that was, I felt like, crowned upon me because of my background and where I come from. And the thing that I always struggled with was, you know, coming to the United States as someone who was Vietnamese, who later on became American, the question was always, who are you? What is your identity? And how do you fit in? And I always had this idea of like who the successful woman would eventually be. And for a long time, that woman was not me. Because I was a kid who was growing up to be a teenager, who then later on, you know, became older. But it was always, how do I fit into this box or this world of fashion? I don't belong on 7th Avenue in Manhattan. I don't see fashion the same way that, you know, it was like introduced to me at a very young age. So where do I fit in? How do I create that place? So I spent my entire life really learning about fashion, first next to my mom sewing. And then afterwards, I went to the High School of Fashion Industries. When I came to university, it was either Columbia or Parsons. And being an Asian American, I was like, well, maybe I should go the more intellectual route, the more academic route. And fashion just kind of like kept tugging at me, you know, the identity part, the who are you and how do you complete the story part kept tugging at me. So I went to Parsons. And at Parsons, while I was there, although I knew how to make patterns and I was like, I'm such a pro at draping and construction, the part that I never really understood was the customer side. What do they want? And who are they? And who are these Americans? And what are they looking for? And who do they want to be? And at the same time, I was thinking about those things for myself as well. So I started working in retail. And that was a really interesting for me because I'm naturally quite shy. This is something that I have been working on. And I had like a hard time really kind of like speaking out and communicating what I was thinking. And what I did was I jumped like head first into communications with like being a retailer. And I helped a lot of customers and with a lot of time and understanding what the customer wanted, not specifically my customer, but customers in general and problem solving. I started to understand that what I really, really love is the human quality that comes with fashion, the one-on-one and the connectedness that it can have. I graduated Parsons right as the towers were crashing. So in 2001, when the Twin Towers came down, I had just graduated. So it was, you know, when something like that big happens, you start questioning, like, what am I doing? Like, why am I doing this? And what is my purpose here? I went back into retail and that's when I had an opportunity. I met this really wonderful woman who really believed in me and we opened up a shop together.
Oh, cool.
We opened a shop together and I started making like little shirts and jackets and coats. And I remember the first day that someone bought something from me, I thought, to myself, oh my gosh, wow, she likes this, like she'll buy it, like I didn't just like make this, like she bought that, like, and it was such a wonderful feeling because it's different when you're making something and you're like, oh, it's so cute, you know, like I can wear this, but it's another thing, you produce something, you put it into the world and you see someone else connects with it. That's the feeling that I search for every single time when someone identifies with something that I've designed. So that's how all the, you know, all of my world kind of connect is I love the full picture. I'm not content with just having one side of it, just its design part of it. I want to know the human being and I want to get to know the customers and I love the retail end as well.
That's so, there's such a special feeling when you see your garment take a new life on another person. And like one thing that I love about fashion, like I went to art school, so I didn't study fashion. I studied art. And one thing I really like about fashion is just how relatable it is in terms of like, you don't need to know a special language or you don't have to like be in a special club to like be able to enjoy clothes, you know, like it doesn't and you can enjoy clothes, appreciate clothes from, you know, really affordable to like you really high end. Like it's just very, it reaches so many people and it's all about identity. Like, you know, the way you dress is all about who you aspire to be, who you are, what values you have. So many, it's so intricate, isn't it? Like, it's so special. So, tell me, like, what were did your parents have any, like, expectation on you when you were, like, choosing your pathway studying or like choosing your pathway for your career? Like how did your mom feel about you choosing to go down the fashion path?
My mom is quite the workaholic and the one thing about I think my parents that was Well, there are other great things about them, but they just wanted me to go to school. You know, it was never about, oh, be a doctor or like be a lawyer or, you know, I was the first in my family to graduate college. You know, there was not a lot of pressure in that way. There was more pressure to do the right things, more pressure to do the right things for the family. But in terms of education, there was, you know, I can really do whatever I wanted.
I bet your mom was like, would feel so so touched that you chose fashion because she was that role model from such a young age for you. Like, I think as a mom, that would have been so special. And I'm sure she's so proud. She's still working, isn't she?
Yes, she is. She works right now where she's working with Theory right now. She was working with Ralph Lauren. I mean, she's worked with so many different designers through all of these years. But when I first, like, I remember her saying to me, like, why are you doing this? Not because she thought that it was a bad idea, but she was like, you know, you see how hard I work. Do you see how hard this is? Like, why would you want to do this? And it did make me question, like, yeah, why do I want to do this? But I also feel that she started this kind of like legacy that I somehow have to complete. You know, this is like part of our, it's a thing that connected us. Like, we didn't spend a lot of time having like long conversations. We spent a lot of time sewing. You know, we spent a lot of time pressing and steaming and working at night. So that is like our connection, and it continues to be the thing that connects us.
Yeah.
But the part of it that she wasn't able to do was the expressive part, the aspirational part, the part that is about not just making something else that someone's telling you to make, but creating something beyond it. And I think that is kind of like our jobs as, you know, that generation of like moving it into a different place. So that I'm really proud of. And during shutdown COVID, I had the opportunity to really work with her like side by side. And that was, you know, really, that was a really wonderful like experience. There were moments where she was like, I'm so proud of you, which is, you know, not an easy thing, I think, for an Asian mom to say, you know, to express, to say those type of things is really, really difficult.
Totally.
And it was a very difficult, it was a very difficult life. And what she wanted was for me to move on from it and not have a difficult life. I mean, my life is still filled with a ton of work, but it's not the same struggle.
Yeah.
You know, it's not burning the midnight oil because you have to put, you know, food on the table, but burning the midnight oil because I need to get this, you know, creative idea out of my system, or I can't sleep until I get something done because it's, you know, it's brewing inside of me. So it's a very different kind of work. Yeah. But it is the thing that threads us together. It's a thing that, you know, stitches us together. And whenever I talk about it, I get very, very emotional. But it's, you know,
it's like so it's really special. Fun. Yeah, it's so special that you have that bond. And I totally know where you're coming from in terms of it. It's like verbal expression about emotions when it comes to like the Asian family environment. Sometimes these things are gestured more than spoken straightforwardly. But yeah, that's so special that your mom, you know, said that she was so proud of you, like when you're working together. That's like so cool.
It's huge.
Like people from other cultures are like, what's the big deal? But yeah, it's such a big deal. But
you have no idea what that means.
I think starting a business in my case actually brought me a lot closer to my dad, because I feel like my dad's a workaholic. He's had his own business but most of his life, and we didn't really have much of a like strong relationship before I started my business, but once I did, like, we had something to talk about, to like bond about. He would like send me random text messages about, you know, ideas he had. So it's like so sweet when you have like an activity to bond over, like with your parents, because, you know, with family, like when you kind of are forced, where you can't choose your family. So when you spend so much time and different kinds of situations with a certain group of people, sometimes you need like an activity to just bond
over. Absolutely. Yeah. I find it to be very true. Whenever I'm with my family, it's never, okay, we're just going to spend time together. It's like, oh, we're eating, or we're making something together, or we are going to dim sum, or we are like, what exactly are we doing? Most of the time it's food, right?
Yeah. It's some excuse to spend time together and do stuff. Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly it. I never thought about it that way, but you're absolutely true. It's never like, oh, we're just going to like hang. No. It's always this, even with my mom now, it's like, I will call her and see how she's doing. Most of the time it's like, mom, can you help me with like this pattern? I'm having a problem with it. Or do you have time like this weekend? Can you make a sample for me? And that's how like we communicate, and it doesn't always, you know, correlate with how I usually communicate. So it makes me feel a little like, what? This feels a little off. Why am I just having these conversations? Like, why can't we talk about like our feelings?
It's an Asian family environment. So you were born in Vietnam. Is that my memory is correct? So you moved to America when you were quite young. Is that right? Yeah.
So tell me
about that.
Yeah, it's, that story by itself like requires like so much time, but make it short. My mother and I escaped Vietnam. We were two of the boat people, the wave of boat people that came to the United States when Vietnam was kind of like taken over by the North. And actually her, most of everyone in her family left. And we left like in the middle of the night. And this was like the third time that she had tried to escape with me. And at that point, I think she tried when I was like 6 months, and then later on when I was like 18 months, and then tried again when I was about 2.5 or like 3. It's hard for me to like pin down the actual dates and numbers, because getting information is also kind of blurry sometimes when it comes to that. It was a very difficult time. So we left there and ended up in a refugee camp and waited for the United States to like come and just sponsor us. And they finally did. I remember my mom was like learning English, and I was like stuck with her like refugee camp roommates who were like really mean. And, you know, her and I had a very close bond from the beginning, because here she is trying to like search for freedom and just a future for us. We finally made it to New York City, and we lived with my great grandparents for a couple of months. And that's when she started, looked for work, and there was a factory very close by where we moved into, which is like Flushing, Queens. There was a factory there. And I remember very clearly there were days where I would go with her to work. Of course, she couldn't afford anybody to watch me. And there was like a metal, I mean, they still have them now. You go to factories, there are like these huge like metal bins where all of the work is in there, and they like tie it up in bundles. So I would sit in that bin. And we were always scared that like someone would like discover, somebody would come in, discover that there was like a child sitting in the bin. And it was always like very, very scary. But that's where I like sat sometimes. And the rest of the time I was pretty much like at home, kind of waiting for her to come home. Family members would like come by and like check up on me. But I don't even think that's called a latchkey kid. I don't think there's a term for it. And this is what, you know, what had to be done.
Yeah.
when you don't have a choice. And that's what I think about all of the times. You know, I have my own kids, and I think about how lucky they are. Mm. You know, and I also think about how lucky I am to be able to have the opportunity to thrive and get to a place where, like, I'm doing what I'm doing. You know, yes, it was really hard, but, like, I'm here. And that's something.
That's something that I find quite amazing about America, is that maybe similar to Australia, where I grew up, like, the society is much more even, like, compared to many other places, and opportunities like being a first generation migrant child, you can end up, you know, have just look at your life story, going to Parsons, starting your own business, having your own fashion label, 20 years of having your store in Brooklyn. Like, that is just, you know, really, like, is a testament to just the opportunities that
they do. I mean, they say that. I guess that's one of the reasons why, you know, everyone escapes and comes here, is because there is that opportunity if you work really, really hard.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
With the opportunities as well. But yeah, it is very even in that way, where in other countries, that may not be the case. I know for sure that if we were to stay in Vietnam, I would have a very different life. Mm. Or even if like my mom had decided to meet my father, for example, who was living in the Netherlands, I know my life would have been very different there too. You know, it's the choices that people who come before us make, and then the choices that we make and how we utilize, you know, what's given to us, that makes the difference. And being in a country where it's possible.
Also, that just the, you know, I think immigrant families, you know, feel much more driven to excel, maybe compared to people in other situations. Also, because I feel like, yeah, despite such hardship, I think there's such a drive to excel, which is, like, quite amazing, and just so respectful to life, you know, which I think is so beautiful. Like, I was actually having this same kind of conversation in Vietnam, in Ho Chi Minh, like, literally yesterday, with the owner of my factory, who's also a woman. She came from the north. She has two children in university in Australia at the moment. And, like, she was just really just proud of, you know, how she had kind of worked from the ground up and been able to send her children to university in Australia. One of them's now a paramedic, and he's earning so much money while he's studying. So, like, it's just a bit of weird deja vu for me, kind of, to have this conversation today. But it's, like, really touches me every single time to hear these stories. Maybe because Vietnam is kind of like a neighbor to me, but there are the history of Vietnam and Thailand are so drastically different that I can really feel that difference in the drive and appreciation for life, if that's the best way to put it, between the two different cultures. And I really have so much admiration and respect for Vietnamese people who really went through so much and still are so, so driven to excel. It's just incredible to me. Like, it's such a difference in culture. So your mother taught herself how to sew?
I mean, she sewed a little bit when she was in Vietnam. You know, I think every woman there knows how to like sew a pair of like shorts, you know, with elastic waistband, something simple that can make for like your siblings. But nothing, you know, it wasn't beyond that. So coming here, that was the opportunity that she was given. There was a point where I remember we had like bags and bags of like little beads all over the floor. And we would like string beads. And I remember thinking to myself, this is going to take forever. That didn't last very long. I was like, there's no way that this is going to lead anywhere.
Have you ever seen a bead spinner?
Oh, I have. Those things are so cool.
They're so cool. Yeah, I didn't know about them until, I have a friend who lives in Thailand. She's like in her 70s now, but she's like a genuine hippie from like the 60s and 70s. Like she definitely was like the epitome of like a free-spirited hippie back in those days, and she does all this beading and she showed me it blew my mind. For those who are listening, a bead spinner is like I can't remember exactly how it works, but it like spins a bunch of there's like a funnel, like it's like a container of beads, and then it spins, and it's like some funnel, and it actually strings beads onto a piece of thread for you. Like, quite for someone who beads, it's life changing.
It really is. It's holding one by one.
Yeah, exactly. Tell me about like your work process in terms of like creating a collection, or from inspiration until like the finished garment. Tell me about that whole process.
It's a good time to talk about it because that's exactly where I am right now. I think before, when I was working on collections, it almost felt like I was reinventing the wheel every single time. And more recently, it's more about an evolution versus starting from scratch. And that comes with just having, you know, the collection for years now, knowing which styles do better than others. But then, you know, you have the part where, you know, the things that will sell, and then the expressive part, which is the experimental part that maybe this will sell, and you do it for yourself. But in terms of like process, I always start with, of course, inspiration. Inspiration, again, is evolutionary. There's always a theme that kind of just arises for me. Last season, not last season, next spring, which is, you know, how the fashion calendar is a little forward. But my most recent collection was Forager, which was, yes, foraging is about, you know, going into the woods and like searching for food and only taking as much as you need. But for me, it was also metaphoric in terms of looking at what I already have, looking at the patterns they already have, looking at the fabrics that I've already worked with, and seeing them in a different way, and becoming very mindful about those things, and not starting from scratch, actually, and using what I already have to create newness. And the collection that I'm starting to work on now is, I think it's going to be called Naughty by Nature. It's not what you think. It's never what you think. It kind of goes back to my childhood of like not having a lot and a lot of clothing and a lot of just anything. And I went back to like photos of myself when I was like 3, 4, 5, 6 and kind of growing up to look at the different outfits that I was wearing. Fine. And it made me think about what it was like coming to the United States as a foreigner. And one, you know, I grew up in Jamaica, Queens. It's primarily, you know, everyone there is like West Indian, it's kind of the opposite of what you would, like everyone was black and I was the only Asian. I was the only Asian kid there. And the music was really kind of shocking to me. You know, I was listening to like covers, like, like Vietnamese covers of like American and French music. And I was like in shock. And one of the first albums that I remember was, it was like Naughty by Nature. And I remember bringing that home and like trying to memorize everything and, you know, pull all the moves together. And I just remember thinking to myself, you know, you can try really hard, but this is like not going to work. So that's why it's called Naughty by Nature. And it's just kind of like an homage to that, like that little girl who was like really awkward and didn't fit in and kind of playing with those silhouettes and those ideas and then bringing them into like a more current space. Who I am now. So I think that's where I'm not sure if that's the name of the actual collection, but that's what comes up right now. So after I come up with, within all of that, it's like the silhouettes, the overall theme, and sometimes even the art direction kind of comes with it as well. And then I go look for fabrics and just like certain fabrics, just like some of them just speak to me and others. That's not even, it almost feels like it's not a choice. It's like it shows up and you're like, okay, well, I have to. Right. Yeah. I don't know if you feel the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. But absolutely.
Some fabrics are just like, okay, I have no choice. And I have an entire box of actual fabrics, you know, that I may not be able to use within the season because it's not the right, you know, makeup. And I save them for like the following season. So every season. I have a whole box of fabrics that I wish that I could have used but didn't use. And therefore, maybe I should use. So that's how it becomes an evolution because it's really about continuing to complete this like book that we're writing, like all the different chapters of it. And it is kind of like never ending. So after
it's like doing this over, you know, a long period of time. It's like every time you do this cycle again, it's like refining every time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's always room for improvement. And I don't know about you, but I find that at the end of each collection, like after I shoot everything and everything's kind of done, I think to myself, how am I going to do this again? Like that was so much. It was so much.
But you know what? Like it's so weird that the more busy you are and the momentum of the fashion calendar, even though it sometimes feels too fast, it does keep you excited and it keeps you kind of motivated for some reason. Yeah. That's absolutely just how it is. I feel like over COVID when there was like a bit of a pause, I really found it hard to keep on track and stay motivated and like get to it.
Yeah, that was hard. Once you stop, you know, I love the fashion calendar for that is that it's constantly pushing you to look into the future, you know, while working on the present and the more immediate future.
You know, it's like a discipline. It's kind of like a good discipline that like, it's almost like an exercise, you know, to keep on track. So then you're making your own patterns, all of your own patterns, and your mom sometimes helps out with that.
She does. She has, you know, she is a master tailor, like a master tailor. And when it comes to like trousers and jackets and such, I always have her make the first sample. You know how important that first sample is. It becomes the template for production and everything. After I decide my different silhouettes, I create patterns. I also use patterns from previous collections and I always find something wrong with them. So that's when I go in and I perfect them. And she becomes my other set of eyes sometimes. When you're working on a pattern for too long and you can't really see straight anymore. Yeah. Like, I'll send it over to her and say, Mom, can you just like look this over and make sure that like I didn't, you know, the pieces actually fit together. Because when you're so close to something sometimes, like you can't really see clearly. And it's nice to have her, and she'll call me and she'll either go, you did a great job, or like, what is this?
Why is the armhole so much bigger than like the sleeve? Those kind of things. Because like for people who don't know how to make, like who aren't making patterns, there's like both, it's a game of geometry and creativity. It's like, you know, like all your everything has to line up and match up geometrically. And, you know, so there's a bit of like, there's logic and math, like, and geometry involved in it. So it's not just like, huzzah, like painting or something where like it's just pure expression, you know. You know, there's a bit of like that discipline in there too.
And then it has to look good and it has to fit. Yeah,
it has to. Also, it has to like fit a bunch of body shapes too, which is so hard. That's like, to me, like when you make that shape that fits, is flattering to like a bunch of body types, that's like such a win. And like my dress that I wore last weekend, the dress that you made, is like a perfect example of that. Like, you know, it's just so, it's like, I love the fact that you can wear it in so many different ways, like without it comes with like this belt or a scarf, like whatever you want it to be, you know, and it changes the whole shape of the silhouette of the dress. And it looks good. It looks so great both ways. There were also like these beautiful pants that came that were like meant to be worn, or not meant to be worn, made to be worn also and or underneath. Or you could wear it with like a skirt or a dress. Like, there's just so many ways that you can wear it, and like I could just picture it on so many different body shapes, which is so, yeah, that's like the biggest win. Like, I can make patterns, but like I don't have the time to make all of my patterns. So like for you to make all your patterns, like that is hands down.
Yeah, I also
an achievement.
I sew most of my samples as well.
Oh my God.
It's part of my design process. I've worked with people, you know, like seamstresses and pattern makers before. And I don't know how to communicate what I want, or maybe my expectations are too high for them, but for what I'm trying to do. But whenever I do send it out, it always comes back not exactly the way that I want it.
Well, and, of course, when you make it yourself, like, yeah, it's just like coming straight out, you know.
I think because I don't have the time to like run back and forth between the factories and talking to everyone, it's like, let me just spend this time and just make it. And sometimes I make things and it's not exactly the way I want it either. And that can be very, very frustrating. But there are other times where it's like, oh, it's not exact, but it's so close. Let me make another one. So part of the design process for me is also it is the actual making of it, the cutting of it, working with the fabric, seeing how it drapes. Because you don't really know until you put all of the elements together and it becomes like a piece.
Sometimes
you think it's going to be something and then it happens. You're just like, well, actually, oh.
Yeah.
I've gotten better totally. At it though, for 3 years. It's just like, oh yeah. Now it's more like, oh, it's exactly what I thought it
would be. Yeah. Also just like the fabric knowledge as well, like took me a few years to like really be able to like really pick the right fabrics for, I mean, to me, fabric choice is everything. Like it's such a big part of like the garment. Yes. And like the right fabric choices everything, but you know, also a fabric that speaks to a wide range of women is very hard to like to understand. It takes like a while to understand. Yeah, which is quite a process too. But yeah, there's so much work that goes into your pieces. Like that's why your pieces really like they're really artisanal in that sense because you're so hands-on. So when it comes to production, like are you making everything in-house as well?
Oh, no. No. Imagine. Actually, yeah, the machine. So there are some times where like if a customer will like contact me and say, I really would love this piece because I know what it's like to like have an event to go to and like really fall in love with something. And if I have the time, I will. Like I'll cut it and sew it and ship it.
Mm.
But no, all of our production is done in New York City. Mm. I work with a factory whom the lady who owns it used to work with my mom. They used to work together. They used to work together at Eric Gaskins, who I don't know if he's still around in terms of designing, but he was a pretty well-known designer like in the 90s. Yeah, in the 90s. And like worked for like Jeffrey Bean. And I worked there for a while too when I was like a teenager. He actually made my wedding dress. So I work with her and she's like kooky and awesome and a little crazy. But like, I love her. She's known me since I was like 8 years old.
I love that.
And my other factory that I work with is actually Lily and Alex from Blue Maid recommended to me. And, you know, I keep it really nice and tight. Like I'm not making like, a ton of pieces. I make just enough because like, where am I going to put like all of the merchandise? And my clothes are very specific for a certain, you know, kind of customer who's looking for a very specific thing. So, no. So production-wise, it's there. Sometimes, though, if I have a little bit of, like, overage of fabric, like, if we have, like, 6 yards of fabric sitting somewhere, like, I will cut it up and I'll make, like, small additions of things and just, like, sell them on the website or through Instagram or, you know, in the shops so that the fabrics are used.
Yeah. 6 yards,
what are you going to do with it?
That's, you know, like, so, like... so nice to like have that too, that ability to just like make something beautiful from like every single bit, you know. That's awesome.
When you don't have when your resources are kind of limited because you know, every inch of this fabric that you buy, you know, this is something that you've worked really hard for, so to go to waste or just sitting there, it's for me, it feels like a challenge, you know, I'm like, okay, so I have 6 yards of this left. Like, what can I do with it to give it new life?
Mm.
And I treat it as like little kind of like small design projects. And whoever gets them is like really lucky because they are usually like one of a kind pieces.
Yeah.
And they're just made in a very, very different way. They're made kind of like on the whim and they're very inspired. And like, it's nice to put that into the world too, because like I have that freedom that I can do that. I can use my time in that way if I choose to.
Yeah. And they were also made from such a caring place of like not wanting to have anything go to waste. Like that's also really beautiful in itself. I think like that's the part of the reason why I started this podcast. It's quite like an industry only, like a mainly fashion industry podcast. Sometimes I venture into other creative fields, but I really wanted to like kind of open the doors into like all the different scales of fashion businesses that there really are. Like, and I think when you're talking about waste in fashion, we're really talking about like larger scale businesses manufacturing when you're like ordering maybe 30% extra like a fabric, but in big volume, and that 30% extra when you're talking about like thousands of pieces at the end of production, whatever like usually is left often just goes into landfill, like just because it's cheaper and easier. And I think like to me, in my perspective, I think like a strong economy in my eyes would look like a lot of different size businesses, like a nice diverse like rainbow of like small to medium sized businesses who really like care about every part of the production process and like the community and of who they're working with and who they're selling to. And like, yeah, I think your business is just such a beautiful example of that, you know, the community of, you know, all the makers, this like special relationship that you have with all your makers and your customers. That's like, to me, the most fun part of like all this hard work too, is just like all the relationships, right? Mm-hmm. All the chats and like all the biscuits and tea and like, yeah, that's
not sharing. I mean, that's what I loved about like what we did for the showroom as well. You know, my world is a world that I have like created. Yeah. So I usually communicate and socialize with only that, like the circle, because it's work. Mm. You know, and all the different businesses. But to be able to, you know, meet like someone like you and be able to speak to someone who's doing, you know, the same thing, a similar thing, and share that kind of information, you know, in a place where it can feel kind of like lonely when you're a small business. Yeah. Like a lonely person who's this. And to realize, oh no, there are others like us, like doing our own thing, trying to like figure out how to, you know, bring our expression into the world. And it is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And it's like totally the opposite from what you would think of like, oh, being like competitive and whatever. It's actually just the world is big and there's enough to go around for like all the different niche things. And like, you know, it's, I think the more diverse you can make the world, like the more people will thrive. I think the world will thrive. So thank you for sharing your beautiful slice of the universe with us. Like, it was such a treat, really, to like listen to your story and just get a little bit of an insight into like the craft that you are so proud of, and your mum's so proud of.
Thank you for having me. Let me like share that with you. You know, it's nice to kind of set the time aside, and also especially today, to look back on, you know, where how far I've come. And it really is something to be very proud of. So thank you for giving that
my
to me.
My pleasure.
And I'm glad we did it today.
Yes, such a special day. What an honor. So if people want to check out your brand, your stores, how can they do that?
So they can go on my website, which is Christine Alcalay. That's Christine, ALCALAY.com. Or you can go into my Instagram handle. I'm really active there at Christine Alcalay.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Christine. I'll see you next season.
I'll see you at March.
Bye, everybody.
Hi. Thanks for having me.